Taking Stock with Pim Fox and Carol Masser. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
All right, so you might not be joining together with the band, but there are companies that are linking up this year. We've seen some M&A activity. In fact, global M&A activity totaling over 6,200 deals in the first quarter. That is, though, a decrease of more than 13% period over period and 10% year over year. Someone who is very involved with deal making and has been for a long time is Bob Profusak over at Jones Day. He's been involved in such deals, including Potash's successful defense against BHP's unsolicited tender offer, also the Continental United Airlines merger of equals. And he joins us in studio. Great to have you here with Pim and me.
Nice to be here.
So how would you describe the M&A space right now?
Well, I'd say the state of M&A is lumpy. Sometimes it gets very, very active. And sometimes, especially year over year, people get sort of unhappy. Usually there's a very direct correlation between the equity markets and M&A. And this time, especially after there's been a big correction, this time we haven't seen that. It's been much more erratic than the equity markets generally.
Why is that, do you think?
Well, part of it, you know, last year there were a million excuses. There was a presidential election. There was sort of the almost seemingly unending European story. There was always an excuse, but there generally business investment across the board was down, and you know everybody can attribute it to what it is. But I think there certainly aren't animal instincts. I don't think there's fear in the boardroom, fear in the financial sponsors, but there isn't a high level of confidence either.
You mentioned the boardroom, and I want to probe a little bit because you've got a lot of experience in the boardroom. Also, just to give the background, you got your BA from Cornell, you got your law degree from NYU, right? So you know a lot about the way that the legal world interacts with the business world. I believe you're on the board of Maybelline as well as Valero Energy and CTS. So the decision to make a deal happen, a lot of times that must be numbers driven, right? Someone presents something to you. You got an investment banker who says, look, this is a good deal. We could do this and the strategy makes sense. But then you have to vet it, right, as a board member. You got to really discuss it. Can you just give us a peel back the curtain a little bit and give us what's the tone of that kind of conversation? How does that evolve? How do you get to, you know, the book is how do you get to yes, but is it as much about personality? Because a lot of M&A, a lot of deals, when afterwards you look back and you say, holy cow, you know, that HP autonomy deal? Bad idea. Shouldn't it?
AOL, that? Time Warner.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I understand 2020 hindsight, in retrospect, everybody's got it. But when you're sitting in the hot seat in that boardroom, how do you discuss it? How do you go through the different steps?
Well, over time, things have changed. It used to be that being a member of a board was more like going to the theater and watching something rather than really participating in it. I don't think directors are stars of the show. They're not really taking the central roles in the process, but they're on the stage now. It isn't just sit back and nod your head and move on to the next point. That's part of the whole corporate governance paradigm shift we've seen. And good managements, and I'd say generally most managements, want to involve their directors in it. One difference, and this may explain some of the lumpiness, is that there is a huge premium, a huge risk assessment that goes into things today, sort of, I think, an after effect of the financial crisis. The due diligence that was done, you might argue, in some instances, was somewhat ritualistic rather than really actionable. Today, it's totally actionable. And it isn't, you know, lawyers talking about terms of the papers or anything. It's forensic analysis of the accounting. It's consultants who are talking about the industry if it's a little bit of a step out from where you are. It's substantive. And that takes time and actually has a tendency, I think, to put a little bit of a damper on things. That's what I mean about, I don't think at least the Western world is fearful There have been times recently where we've been fearful. It's not that, but we're certainly not damn the torpedoes, really aggressive, go out and shoot, you know, hit for the fences. It's more get on base, don't make a mistake right now.
Isn't that a good thing?
It's not necessarily a bad thing. And, you know, there have been some pretty darn good transactions in this quarter. It is a little bit down. The first quarter statistically was down, but part of that was I think some stuff was moved up into the fourth quarter because of taxes and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to see a robust market. Is it going to be 2006 for the second half of this year? No, I don't think so, but it'll be solid. I mean, it's a good market. And maybe it is a good thing because maybe deals are done with a little bit more care. I don't mean to imply by that people were careless in the past, but there is a lot more focus on that, and it's brought to the boardroom.
Can't you tell he's got a legal mind?
But it's almost like a relationship. It's not just the chemistry, which is a good thing, but, right, everything else has to kind of fall into place, and you have to kind of agree on things and be on the same. I mean, I'm simplifying it, but do you know what I'm saying?
That's right.
There could be an attraction, and it sounds good, but is it really good?
Yes. And of course, there are some pretty colossal failures. But don't forget, there are roughly 40,000 deals a year in the world.
Because a lot are small and mid-sized
And 97% of all of M&A is under $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's really for law firms. It's those deals that pay the bills. We don't put them on our resumes and all that stuff so much. But that's the sort of day-to-day aspect of it. And most deals are done and done well. And in today's environment, the math, the accretion arithmetic of deals is fabulous because of the incredibly low cost of capital. All you have to do is tack something on and your numbers go up big time.
Right.
And you don't have to worry about that so much.
We're speaking with Bob Profusek. He is a partner, head of mergers and acquisitions at Jones Day. He's based in Washington, but he joins us in the studio today. Bob, tell us a little bit about nationalism around the world.
Well, nationalism is becoming a factor. It used to be focused mostly on natural resources and obviously national security things, Dubai ports. Even Unocal, you remember a few years ago when a Chinese company came after it. It's actually becoming a much more of a factor.
And not just the Chinese.
No, it's not just the Chinese, although there's an odd sense of maybe it's like a bad marriage. People in America think the Chinese aren't open enough to investment, and the Chinese very much think that the Americans are not open for investment.
Hmm.
But companies are more and more being perceived as national assets. Deal a couple weeks ago with Yahoo, tech deal. And it wasn't natural resources. It wasn't anything else. And basically the minister of finance in France just said, you're not taking one of the crown jewels of France. You're not buying this company. It wasn't a huge deal, but it made quite a ripple in the deal community because we're used to it in these other industries,
right.
Not used to it in tech. So it is a factor, and it's particularly important because the percentage of transactions today that are either cross-border in a literal sense or global in some sense is enormously high, especially as Western companies try to move into higher growth, you know, emerging, so-called emerging markets. So it's becoming more and more a factor, and we don't seem to have our act together. It's being handled country by country, not really with a sense of purpose.
So is it holding all global companies back, or is it holding American companies in particular, you know, back
It varies. There were 600 transactions involving investments by Chinese companies in Canada last year. 600. That's a big number it's a big country in a way,
right,
in terms of resources, but not population. Only a handful in the U.S. So, it really varies. And it's much more of a factor as the rest of, you know, world, you know, evens up with the West.
So do you think it potentially makes the U.S. less competitive if we continue this?
Well, I'm a big believer in open markets. So to me, the idea that politics gets in the way of it. Now, part of it is perception. We live in a sort of cacophonous democracy where anybody can stand up and say something. So when a congressperson makes a comment to the media and it goes on to over the news media to somebody in a country like China, they think this means something. Of course, people here realize it's just a news bite, you know, sound bite.
Right.
But it's different in terms of the perception. So it's a factor. But believe me, I think that's the I would I would guess almost half of all transactions have some global component to them today.
Bobby, you mentioned the idea of low-cost capital, that is helping or at least gives companies the opportunity to borrow money at very low interest rates in order to do deals, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So as someone that has noted the effects in business and mergers and acquisitions, as someone who has experience in the boardroom, do you think that it really is responsible for the increase in stock prices? Because not only are you a lawyer, but I'm sure you've managed to save some money, so you have to invest it. But most people are trying to figure out, is this real? Is the value that people are putting on companies, does it make sense? Or is this all just some bubble that's going to end badly? Should we be scared?
Well, it's a little of all of the above, I think. One of the things about low cost of cash, in addition, companies have tremendous amounts of cash on their balance sheets, which obviously on a return on investment basis are eroding value.
Why do they hold that cash? Is because the corporate treasurer doesn't want to lose his or her job when
because they don't
find
know what to do with it.
Yeah.
There's a big part of it is the how much is offshore, how much is onshore.
I've heard people too coming off the crisis when they couldn't access capital.
We all think in a way that the financial crisis was so long ago, like the Depression. It was only 5 years ago, and don't forget, at least many of us thought, myself included, that maybe we'd all be eaten out of dumpsters or something.
You still got scars from that time?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Is there any particular moment that you recall in 2008, 2009, where you really didn't know what was going to happen
tomorrow?
Well,
in 2008 and 2009, the deal markets ground to a halt, except on the distress side, of course.
Right.
But they otherwise ground to a halt. And part of that has been, there have been a lot of aftershocks of that. It was just a month ago, wasn't it, that we were fixated on Cyprus. It's sort of the Freddy Krueger of the financial markets. You can't quite kill it off. It always comes back. But the math, because of the amounts of cash that companies have and private equity firms have, and the low cost of debt and incredibly favorable terms, it's not just the cheapness of it, it's the ocean of availability of it and the freedom to use it. It makes deals very attractive. On the other hand, part of that also has made multiples go up. The multiple of cash flow you have to pay to get the deal, which is where the deal people typically look at this. People were surprised, for example, at Heinz. It was only 20% premium to market. Well, that was a 20% premium to all-time high.
Right. And we're starting from a high base.
And a 9.3 multiple of cash flow, which in deal land is a very handsome price. There was a Nielsen sold a little business a week ago, not a little business, it was a $1 billion deal, where again the multiple was in the nines. Back a couple of years ago, we were looking at multiples in the fours and fives.
What does that tell you?
Well, pricing is the value, the amount you have to pay to win has gone up because the cost of capital has gone down. Logical, but it's still hard, very hard if you're a CEO or a financial sponsor to say, I'm going to have to pay a nine multiple to get this.
Yes.
For the point, and it goes going back to the point Pim made, because are these equity multiples going to stay there forever, or is it a so-called melt-up that when the Fed ultimately gives that signal, will eventually take some of the bloom off the equity rose?
What will happen to deal flow when we start to see changes in Fed policy?
Well, I think when people actually see interest rates going up, and it's pretty clear that the Fed, at least to me anyway, is going to give a very long warning to that. It'll probably, on a short-term basis, produce a spate of deals because people think, I got to get this deal done because it really works on these numbers. But if the 10-year Treasury goes back to 450 or something like that, the math doesn't work as well. You look at, the big Comcast deal in the media space in February.
Mm-hmm.
Again, big number as a multiple, but a very attractive long-term financing. And some people thought, I'm just repeating what others have said, that big part of it was the Comcast sense that this is the best time ever to lock in those rates on something obviously they wanted to do. They were just buying the other half of what they
owned. It was just timing for them, right?
So great time. Well, maybe you could time it a little bit better, but lock it in and get it down. When rates start going up, you're going to get a spate. You're going to get a lot of activity, probably to be followed by a little bit of a slowdown.
Are there specific industries that you can point to that you think are ripe for consolidation? Because I know that you've worked a lot in the airline industry, and we've had people come on the program and say, you know what, the consolidation has really made it healthier for the remaining airlines because they're the ones that can fill the seats and make the money. I'm wondering if you see similar things in other industries.
Well, my view is that the front page of the business section and the front page of the news section in any newspaper are really not that far apart. What's happening in the world generally is usually what's happening in M&A. Right now, healthcare, for example, and there's a bunch of write-up today about activists.
Just got a few seconds.
There's going to be a lot in that energy, especially in this country. Energy was 18% of all of M&A last year. That's astonishingly high. It's all the things that are going on. You'll see M&A.
To come back.
Okay.
This was fun. Bob Profusek over at Jones Day.
Taking Stock, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.